Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Given the current state of the auto industry and the economy, Chapter 11 is unlikely to work for American automakers at this time.
President Bush, speaking 1 hour ago, announcing the bridge loan for the auto industry that the House of Representatives had passed, but the Senate rejected, using money from the TARP. That's the $700 billion of bank bailout money ordered by, well, President Bush. It's a one-man auto industry bailout. Let's talk about it. And also talk about President-elect Obama's choice for labor secretary. She is California Congresswoman Hilda Solis from East L.A. with roots in the labor movement, and she is also the first Central American member of Congress. With me for this, Sonia Ramirez, legislative representative for the AFL-CIO, and Jeff Green, who covers the automakers. He's the Detroit bureau chief for Bloomberg News. Welcome back, both of you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Sonia, President Bush did instruct the automakers to restructure their labor and pension agreements. From your AFL-CIO perspective, is this good for organized labor?
I think that remains to be seen, and I think that, you know, several concessions have been made already, and that the labor movement has been willing to make concessions where necessary to ensure that we preserve the manufacturing sector in this country.
And, Jeff, the president did say that the terms of this loan insist that a successful restructuring must be completed by March, including new pension agreement, a new labor contract with current workers, or the companies will have to pay the government back. So the government will determine whether a new labor agreement is acceptable or not?
Yeah, and it's the next government that will determine that, which is going to be more labor-friendly than the current government. So that's a key consideration. If you read the statement that they put out explaining the terms, much of this is very flexible. If they come up with another solution that gets at it in the same way that requiring labor to take the cuts that are spelled out in the bullet points, they can still make a deal that doesn't do explicitly what's in the note and meet the requirements.
Is this presidential order legal? Jeff, Congress rejected this very bill, and the TARP money that they authorized spending here was for the banks and said nothing about automakers. Is the president breaking the law here, or might someone sue to stop this?
I'm not a lawyer, so I can't tell you that for sure, and obviously people sue all the time whether things are legal or not. This seemed to be what Congress really wanted them to do, so I don't think you're going to have much problems with at least the majority of Congress. It's sort of what needed to be done, I guess, in their eyes. Is bailing out Citigroup over the weekend legal? Those are the sort of questions that I don't know how to answer.
Sonia, any opinion about this? The Senate at least did defeat this bill, and now the president is using TARP money, which said nothing about the automakers. That bill only referred to the banks. Maybe there was some elastic clause in there. Any opinion?
Not at this point. I think that we're still, you know, reviewing the guidelines and making sure that we're keeping conversations open with the administration as well as with the UAW.
And then there are elastic clauses. You mentioned that says something about the overall state of the economy needing to prop up the overall health of the economy, which may give them the wiggle room they need to do this.
Also, Jeff, the president was reportedly thinking about a structured bankruptcy using Chapter 11. That had been widely reported this week. But clearly from his announcement, he decided against that, and he gave them the government bridge loan that they were seeking. Why do you think it went that way instead of a structured, what he calls orderly bankruptcy under Chapter 11?
If you paid close attention to what was said yesterday, that was actually never his intent to send that signal. And whatever consideration there was for some sort of bankruptcy consideration was abandoned very quickly in the discussions. The statements, there's a lot of people who are really interested in this idea, so the statements were taken and run with. But he even said yesterday that Chapter 11 may have been an option for these companies in regular times. These are not regular times. We shouldn't consider Chapter 11 to sort of bring the discussion back to the center, but by the time he said that, it already kind of taken off from what one of his press secretary said earlier in the day about it. I think what they're talking about is more of a bankruptcy-type restructuring without bankruptcy.
Well, here's another 45-second clip from the president's announcement just over an hour ago, and we will hear within this the nature of the loan as he describes it. And you will hear that preparation for Chapter 11 bankruptcy remains one of the reasons that the president is offering the loan.
So today I'm announcing that the federal government will grant loans to auto companies under conditions similar to those Congress considered last week. These loans will provide help in two ways. First, they will give automakers 3 months to put in place plans to restructure into viable companies, which we believe they are capable of doing. Second, if restructuring cannot be accomplished outside of bankruptcy, the loans will provide time for companies to make the legal and financial preparations necessary for an orderly Chapter 11 process that offers a better prospect of long-term success and gives consumers confidence that they can continue to buy American cars.
So, Sonia Ramirez, he talked again there about the orderly Chapter 11 process, if necessary. He didn't want a disorderly Chapter 11 process that wouldn't allow a restructuring for possible longer-term success. But from your AFL-CIO perspective, what do you think Chapter 11, even an orderly so-called Chapter 11, would mean for the auto workers that restructuring under a bridge loan would not?
Well, I think that we've been following the lead of the UAW on this, and their concept is that a bankruptcy would have devastating effects in terms of sales of automobiles, and that would have obvious negative impacts on workers and the ability for these companies to remain in business and to maintain their workforce. So I think that, you know, they've clearly signaled that they prefer the bridge loan approach.
Jeff Green from Bloomberg, same question, because the president clearly signaled at the end of that clip that he would hope that American consumers would continue to buy U.S.-made cars, even in a Chapter 11 situation, if it was an orderly Chapter 11.
Well, then, you know, how do you do an orderly Chapter 11 is the big question in Detroit. They don't see that as something that's all that easy to do with so many different constituents. And that was the contingent on them not being able to restructure by March 31st. So basically what the president is saying, challenging both the union and the debt holders and everybody else involved, get this done by March 31st or we'll be back talking about this thing, but you say we'll end in liquidation. It's sort of the pressure that they have. Without going into bankruptcy, they sort of give the company the force of authority that a bankruptcy judge would otherwise give them. It's bankruptcy if you don't do this versus you're in bankruptcy, now do this.
Jeff Green, Detroit Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News, thank you very much for joining us.
It was good to be here.
Sonia Ramirez, legislative representative from the AFL-CIO, stays on now to talk about the new Labor Secretary nominee from President-elect Barack Obama. She is the first Central American member of Congress. She is California Congresswoman Hilda Solis of East L.A., praised as having deep roots in the union movement. She led the fight to raise the California state minimum wage. She has already written a bill in Congress for a so-called green-collar workforce training program, something we now know President Obama will embrace in a big way. Here is Congresswoman Solis on the House floor in support of another controversial pro-union bill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and I rise in strong support as a family member from a strong union background. My father was a shop steward for the Teamsters, and my mother was a proud worker for the United Rubber Workers, who worked tirelessly for 20 and 25 years. Without the health protection that we received in retirement benefits, I know myself and my 7 siblings wouldn't be where we are today. It's important for people to have the ability, especially in this day and time, when new women, new immigrants are coming about and want to be a part of the American fabric. One of the ways they can do that is by joining up to the union, being a part of that, to have those protections in place. When union people get paid good wages, that money stays in the community. It helps to provide a vibrant economy. It helps to also even send their children, like me, who's a child of immigrants and of a union household, to be able to come to college and to eventually even run for office. Wow, outstanding. The unions always get a bad name by certain people in this area. But I'll tell you one thing. I'm very proud to stand with many of our union members to see how they have revitalized many of our communities, especially in Los Angeles. I ask for you to support H.R. 800.
Gentlemen. Congresswoman Hilda Solis of California. Now the reported choice of Barack Obama to be the next Labor Secretary of the United States. Sonia Ramirez, legislative representative for the AFL-CIO, is still with us, and I suspect this is a choice you're very happy with, yes?
Absolutely, absolutely. We're very excited and certainly congratulate President-elect Obama for selecting someone who certainly stands with workers.
What does a Labor Secretary actually do?
I think they oversee the implementation and most importantly, enforcement of our labor laws in our workplaces every day. So ensuring that workers are protected, that, you know, the laws we have on the books are being enforced at the workplace to ensure the safety and the well-being of workers.
Do you think that the recession changes or highlights the role of a labor secretary?
I think that it will be critically important for someone with the strength of Hilda Solis to ensure that we're enforcing minimum wage, wage and hour laws across the board, that we are ensuring that unscrupulous employers are not filling their pockets or making up their losses on the backs of workers. So enforcement in this area will be critical, and I think she's an excellent choice to move forward in this area.
Listeners, any reaction to the choice of Hilda Solis as Labor Secretary? Any reaction to President Bush's one-man auto company bailout? 212-433-WNYC. Our phones are open, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. The bill that she rose in support of in the clip that we played from the House floor has been getting a lot of attention in the press. This is a labor agenda item that will apparently see the president-elect support. It's the so-called card check issue. And this is about how unionization elections are held. The union position, her position, is that voting to unionize should not be a secret ballot. But let me ask you, as a representative of the AFL-CIO, why should any important vote in our democracy not provide the privacy and protection of a secret ballot?
Well, first of all, I would call into question your characterization that this is only something that would be important for organized labor. I mean, I think this is, it's critically important for workers to have the ability to collectively come together and demand better wages and better benefits at the workplace. And I think that what the Employee Free Choice Act does is that it eliminates the barriers that employers have used consistently and frequently to take away the right of workers to collectively organize and demand better rights at the workplace.
Well, wouldn't an opponent of unionization be subject to reprisals or intimidation from fellow workers if the vote has to be done publicly?
Well, I think what we've seen in place now is that employers have used the system as it exists now to their advantage to bust union organizing efforts. So, as I said, I mean, I think that the Employee Free Choice Act simply returns us to an equal playing field in terms of workers having the ability to collectively organize.
But what's the equal playing field? I mean, isn't there a way to stop management intimidation without opening the door for union intimidation or colleague intimidation by breaking what is certainly in our, you know, electoral system for elected office is considered a bulwark of democracy, the secret ballot?
As I said, I mean, I think what we've seen so far in place is that the current system has been used against workers. So all the Employee Free Choice Act does is to remove the barriers to
tell us how. How does an employer use simply the fact of a secret ballot to intimidate workers out of voting to unionize?
They create these forced receptions and forced meetings that are basically opportunities for employers to talk negatively about what unions do and how they, from their perspective, feel that they undermine their workplace.
Why can't why don't they have the right to make that case to the workers and then let the workers vote secretly, yes or no?
Well, I mean, as I said, I just think that the current system, as it's played out, has been a disservice to workers, and that we've seen exactly the impact of this secretive process that employers have engaged in to demean and to degradate the effectiveness of what a collective voice can be at the workplace.
Well, back to Hilda Solis. She is the daughter of Mexican and Nicaraguan parents. Has she been an advocate for immigrants in her public life, too?
Absolutely. I think she's demonstrated to be an advocate for workers, for women, for Latinos, and overall just as a progressive leader in the House of Representatives.
Do you see this election as having implications for immigration policy?
I hope so. I mean, I think that we have always sort of made the point that an important enforcement regime from the Department of Labor will be critical to having any sort of comprehensive immigration reform proposal that truly protects workers at the workplace.
Well, in the larger sense, how do you think the recession with so much unemployment changes the immigration debate? Again, from the AFL-CIO perspective, does it put even more pressure, should it, on employers not to hire undocumented foreigners, create more tension between unemployed native-born Americans and immigrants, legal or illegal, looking for work? How do you see that?
Well, I think that it creates a great opportunity for us to revisit some of the policies we have in place with some of the existing guest worker programs that invite workers with limited workplace rights who create an unfair competitive situation for U.S. workers. So I think enhancing, as I said, the protections at the workplace for all workers will be very significant. I think it also makes it very critical for us to really contemplate a legalization scheme for the current undocumented population, because as we see unemployment figures rise, I think it's going to be more attractive for unscrupulous employers to rely on an unauthorized workforce because they'll be a cheaper source of labor. So I think that, you know, we need to have enforcement from a wage and hour and from an OSHA perspective in these workplaces. But we also need to make sure that we know who's in these workplaces so that people have legal standing to stand up for their rights at the workplace. Because, you know, if there's unsafe conditions that are endured by one worker, that's not the only worker that's enduring those unsafe conditions. So I think this sort of pushes the question that we really need to contemplate a legalization scheme that brings the folks that are here, that are working every day already in our workplaces, into some sort of legal status. Whether we have a future program, a program that invites workers in the future, and what that might look like, I think, becomes complicated by the fact that we may have an oversupply of workers available in the U.S. already.
Let's get a couple of calls in here. We've been talking about President Bush's one-man auto bailout and the selection by Barack Obama, reportedly, of L.A. Congresswoman Hilda Solis to be the next labor secretary. David in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, David.
Yes. Hi, good morning. My comment has to do with United Auto Workers. They're really totally unrealistic in their demands in this global economy. They simply have to meet the benefits and wages of those that are, say, producing cars for Toyota, et cetera, in this country. And if they don't, then the American auto industry, big three, are just simply going to shut down because they can't continue those kind of costs.
Sonia Ramirez, what do you say to David in Manhattan?
I mean, I think that the UAW has been at the table from the beginning and has been willing to make concessions in terms of their contracts to ensure that these companies are able to remain competitive in the global market. I also believe that as a country, we have decided that we want workers to be able to come together and to collectively demand fair wages and benefits, and that, you know, the United Auto Workers are doing their job by workers, standing strong and ensuring that they're putting workers first in this and voicing the concerns of U.S. workers in this country and making sure that they have wages that they're able to live in dignity with. So I think that, I don't believe that it requires that we, you know, diminish the values that workers have and the rights that workers have to demand fair wages in order to remain competitive in a global market.
Terry in Jamaica, you're on WNYC. Hi, Terry.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for taking the call.
Mm-hmm.
Really appreciate your show. And my call is a concern with, we think we have a race to the bottom here. And part of the thing is with President Bush, and he talks about the car companies. We're talking about maybe a car czar, all these conditions, wage concessions. Why are these same things not being asked of the banks with a bank czar, all these conditions, and maybe their six-figure employees' salaries going down to more reasonable salaries of other banks?
It is a really good question. We raised it on the show the other day, too, that all of these conditions are, placed upon the auto companies and really the auto workers. When they gave Citigroup its bailout, nobody said the average stockbroker salary, which is certainly in the six figures, had to come down to some degree. Have you been talking about this at the AFL-CIO, Sonia?
Absolutely, and I think this certainly is an excellent point and really shows the disparity in treatment and the fact that people are very willing to ask for extreme concessions on the part of working people, but when it comes to CEOs are not willing to demand the same.
It's not just CEOs. It's a rank-and-file, non-unionized workforce.
Sure.
Where the average employee is making many times what the average automaker earns, and
absolutely,
yet nobody seems to talk about that. But Ron and Clifton, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ron.
Hi. How you doing? Thanks
okay.
for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm definitely not a fan of big business, but it seems to me, especially in the UAW situation, that the members and the bosses are just not thinking about the future. They're at the point where they're going to lose hundreds of thousands of jobs, and they just won't give in. I mean, their parents and their grandparents left them good jobs, and they seem not to care about their kids or their grandkids. They're willing to give, to let the companies go under, and you can't be a me type of society. And I realize that that's what we are, but they got to think about the future.
Sonia, Sonia Ramirez.
I think that they're thinking about the future and that they're thinking about the lives of workers and the ability for workers to live in dignity in this country with earning wages that allow them and afford them that ability. So I do think they're thinking into the future.
And ultimately, Ron, I think that when push comes to shove, there's still a bargaining process here. The auto workers union knew that President Bush was going to do this unilaterally if Congress didn't. So push hadn't come to shove yet. They didn't have to give the concession yet. By the end of March, when this bridge loan runs out, presumably...
Well, they're already giving away their kids. There's a two-tier situation already. They've already given away their kids in their future and their grandkids' future. It's all me.
So
they've given away their kids' future already.
So you don't want new employees to work at lower wages or benefits. But that would take the auto companies down. So I'm not sure what you're arguing.
Me?
You.
Ron?
Yeah, you.
They've given away. There's a two-tier, right?
Yes.
The employees coming in now are working for
yes.
a lot less.
Right. But arguably, if they don't do that, then the companies really will go under, no?
But the retirees and the workers now, they don't want to give in. They're giving away their kids' money. They're not giving away anything on their own.
Ron, thank you very much. Scott in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I believe the guest didn't make the case as forcefully as can be made for the Employee Free Choice Act. I mean, the issue is really the structural legal conditions that lead us to have one of the lowest unionization rates in the world, despite the fact that most workers express the desire for having a union. And that has to do with the ability of employers to make arbitrary reprisals against union activists and employees favoring a union, and legal redress takes years and years. So the issue is not really having a secret ballot versus a public election, but rather making it a petition-style process where workers would express their desire for a union.
Well, why wouldn't a secret ballot protect workers from reprisals by management even better than a petition system, and also uphold the dignity of the individual to vote secretly?
Because, in fact, what happens is that union organizers don't have access to the workplace. They hire anti-union consultants. It's a process where people are in fear of losing their jobs, and it takes years and years to organize plants, as you've seen with the most recent example of a New York Times story just this week about the organizing of a processing plant earlier this week in the New York Times.
What happened there?
It took years, and the firings and legal redress and subsequent many years later, reinstatement of fired union activists for them to finally get a unionization of the plant.
Scott, thank you very much for your call. And Sonia Ramirez, we're out of time, so thank you for all this time this morning. Legislative representative for the AFL-CIO in Washington. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, do you care that Rick Warren, who has spoken about homosexuality as the equivalent of incest, and we'll hear that clip, Rick Warren has been tapped by Barack Obama to give the invocation at the inaugural. We'll talk about it. Stay tuned.